This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Hey there, young man. Good morning.
Well, good morning, rascal. How you doing?
Pretty good. Hey, you're the rascal.
Yes, I am. You know I am.
Nice to feel the warmer temperatures this week.
Yeah, huh? It's about time. Yeah. It's. I was getting a little scared there. I thought maybe we'd just be at like 45 degrees for through November, you know.
But, you know, most years, I mean, we just have cool springs anymore. Generally, you have got to get to that first or second week of June before you get all of the cool weather behind us, it seems.
Yeah. I also read a story earlier about Indiana, some of the crops there getting a late start.
Yeah, late planting there again for the second year in a row for some of those growers. And also that's the case in Ohio. They're not pushing the panic button yet, but and it's not the extent of very heavy flooding rains that we had last year, but still they're a little bit behind, and we're seeing some acreage shift, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But yeah, the sunny skies, nice this week, and nice breezes, warm temperatures helping dry out the soils where the recent rains had occurred. I was out on my bicycle on the trail the other day, I guess it was Thursday, and it was just so nice. People were coming out of the offices, and they were out on the trail also walking during the lunch hour, and it just
nice to get out into the fresh air. Yeah, definitely.
Certainly. Well, do you like pistachios or almonds? Are you a nut guy?
I like cashews. I'm not into pistachios too much. I like some of the other nuts also, but not in excess.
There are three major tree nuts produced in California. You've got the pistachios and the walnuts, and then especially in recent years, there's been an explosion of the almond production out there, and they have seen such rip-roaring demand around the world that they responded to it, as we often do in the agriculture economy. We step up to the plate and grow more, and quite often the pendulum swings too far, and that's what's happened in the tree nut industry in California, and they're going to wind up probably pulling out trees.
Oh, no.
Because prices are going to be depressed after they've started growing too much of it. We have that problem in U.S. agriculture. We let the market work when we respond to the market, and then usually there's an over-response, and low prices cure low prices, as we've often seen, and then the production tails off and the prices go back up, and it's an interesting thing to watch, and it doesn't just happen in corn and soybeans here in our part of the country, but also in the tree nuts, too, and I'll talk about that coming up momentarily, but it's always great to visit with you, Raj.
You too, sir, and we will see you in about 20 minutes.
All right, we'll check back in to get a news update. Roger Badish in the newsroom here. Saturday morning show from WGN coming up on 11 after 5. Max Armstrong with you this morning as the Big O is taking a day off. But there was a lot of news this week. There were a lot of things happening in the agriculture sector. A new report, for example, on genetically enhanced crops. They're just fine. There's nothing to worry about. This is probably the 500th report to tell us that. And yet there will be people who do not believe it. And because we are looking at an issue that is emotional here, and they're not looking at it with a scientific viewpoint. And that's why the organic industry continues to grow. We had a report on that this week, that it grew by about 11%. Restaurateurs are in town. The National Restaurant Show is going on. We'll talk about that a little bit later. A lot of events on our ag calendar. I'll highlight a couple of those, including the big Hay Expo that'll be in Boone, Iowa in just a few days. That's coming up in the month of June. But back to something that I mentioned very briefly with Roger is the fact that we have yet one more chemical industry in the agriculture crop protection business, one more chemical industry merger that came out this week. And that was the news that German-based pharmaceutical and agriculture giant Bayer is offering to buy St. Louis-based Monsanto. This would be the largest German takeover of a foreign company. And this comes after the news a few weeks ago that ChemChina wants to acquire Syngenta. And then there was the news a few weeks back, about 3 months ago, I guess, that Dow Chemical and DuPont would plan to merge. And all three of these deals, of course, raise antitrust concerns. And certainly in the minds of farmers, they do create angst about concentration in the hands of a few of these products that are needed to seed and grow our crops. And here are the numbers that really get your attention when you're looking at these mergers. With the approval of all three of these big deals, if they're all approved just the way they've been proposed, 83% of the United States seed corn sales and 70% of the global pesticide market would wind up under the control of three companies. Let me repeat that. With the approval of all three of these big deals, now this is assuming no divestiture, I guess, 83% of the United States seed corn sales and 70% of the global pesticide market would wind up under the control of three companies. And yes, maybe some divestiture would be required by the U.S. Justice Department. We see that from time to time. But I tell you, I cannot recall many recent instances where the feds have stepped in and outright blocked a planned merger. And with something as vital as these inputs that are required to produce the crops that provide our food, I would imagine and would certainly hope that this combination would get a closer look, too. But it'll be interesting to watch this. And, you know, it's not just a done deal from the standpoint of the Bayer shareholders. And the Wall Street Journal points this out, that this would bring the German pharmaceutical company into genetically enhanced crops, bringing these two businesses together, because Monsanto, of course, is a dominant supplier of the genes and the licensing for the rival production companies in producing the crops. And the deal could face a hurdle with Bayer's investors. Many of them have invested in Bayer because it's a pharmaceutical company. Yeah, they make Bayer aspirin, and I think there's a birth control drug that they make also. And, you know, they're interested in health care. And the big firms that have invested in Bayer stock really aren't all that familiar with agriculture. A fund manager at Union Investment, Marcus Manns, said, "I'm not sure we would appreciate this shift from pharma," as he put it. So it'll be interesting to watch and see if this clears all of the hurdles. Some of those, you know, could be shareholder hurdles. And some may be indeed of a regulatory nature. Talking with Roger a moment or two ago, I was talking about the nut business, and the fact that they've got too much of a good thing going on these days. Yeah, there was a report that came out this week from the big bank for cooperatives, CoBank. That's the bank headquartered in Denver that lends to agribusiness, and they looked specifically at what's happening in the production of the nuts, the pistachios, the walnuts, the almonds that we enjoy. We love them, and things like candy bars. Some people drink that almond milk, which, of course, is Orion Samuelson, the boy from the Kickapoo who grew up there not far away from those teats of the cows. That's not milk, he would say. Milk comes from a cow. But anyway, this golden run that they've had in the tree nut industry may be coming down to a screeching halt for the better part of 15 years. There have been soaring prices in the nut business, and the growers worked to fill that seemingly insatiable demand for United States nuts. And they put in thousands of acres of new trees, and all of those are going to start bearing pretty soon. And here's an interesting statistic that came out from CoBank, that bank headquartered in Denver that lends to agribusiness. Christine Lensing, a senior economist with the bank, said it's estimated that 5 years from now, well, less than 5 years, by 2020, there will be an additional 1.3 billion pounds of walnuts, almonds, and pistachios entering the market. That would be, listen to this, that would be as much as 38% more supply of nuts by 2020 than we had last year. So the prices that have been decreasing will continue to be lower. And then you've got things like the stronger United States dollar that impedes exports. You've got water supply issues in California, with the difficulty of supplying some of those trees and the pressures that the industry faces because of that. There's global production that is increasing of nuts, other countries growing them because of the recently higher prices. There's the slowdown of the growth in China They're buying a lot of food from us yet, buying essential food, maybe not buying as many nuts. So all of this is coming together to make for a tougher time, apparently, in the years ahead for the tree nut producers. And generally, when you're talking about those folks, you're talking about the agriculture industry of California. Well, coming up here on the Saturday morning show, we're going to talk about the markets of agriculture, and we're going to talk with Jim Fazell, our consulting horticulturist. Ah, the subject of drones may come up, too. Stay with us here on the Saturday morning show. Yep, it's time to visit with our horticulturist friend, Jim Fazell. You know what? I think I'm just doing a little tallying in my mind here, but it's nowhere near, of course, to the record Orion Samuelson has in interviews with Jim Fazell. But I do believe this is my 38th growing season of extracting knowledge from this veteran horticulturist. Jim, how have you been?
Well, I've been good, Max. You know, it's been too long since we visited, and we need to do this more often if we can, but it's always fun.
I love the arrival of spring because I get to talk to you after a long, cold winter, but doggone it, all of these springs anymore are cold, aren't they? We just don't have the kind of warm spring that we used to have 30 years or so ago.
It seems that way. Spring just has a tough time getting started, and up here in our area of the country where the farmers are trying to get out and get their corn planted by the 10th of May, they had to have a canoe to get out in the field in a lot of cases. Not only was it cold, but awfully wet. And I think finally this past week we've had just a little bit of, it's been a cool week, but it's been a little bit dry for once. We haven't had the 4 inches of rain that we kind of been getting. But there's still a 20% chance of a freeze. You know, we always think about the full moon in May because all the old-time Luxembourg farmers around this part of the country said the last frost of the season is on the full moon in May. Well, we beat that by a week because we had a frost last weekend in a lot of these areas, and the full moon is tonight. But anyway, spring is coming.
You know, the other day, my wife was saying to me, well, you're pressing your luck if you get it out there ahead of Memorial Day, recalling all of those frost opportunities in the past, and there is something to that, isn't there?
There really is. Actually, the latest date of last frost is Memorial Day. There have been a couple of exceptions to that, but that's a pretty good rule. Don't put anything out until Memorial Day unless you can cover it up. And you know, with a little home garden that most of us have, it's not too hard to get a sheet or blanket and go out and cover things up. But if you're planting acreage, an acre of tomatoes is pretty hard to cover.
Yeah,
so
that's
you want
sure.
to be careful about getting stuff out too early.
As much as I like spring, there are two things about it that I'm not too crazy about. One of those, all of the geese in our area, and doggone it, it was last Thursday morning, I was driving down the street in Naperville, and all of a sudden, a pair of geese stepped out into the roadway. One got right into my lane, and I'm looking in the rearview mirror as I'm locking up my brakes, trying not to hit it. That's one of the rites of spring we have, it seems, every year around here.
Yeah, and you know, these crazy birds don't just come in from the south at this time of year. They stay here all winter, but it seems like they hide pretty well. But as soon as we get into warm weather and the grass starts growing, we have them everywhere. They're flying from the lakes to the grass and back and forth. And in the evening, a lot of times out in DuPage County, for instance, where there are a lot of ponds out there, there are actual flocks of geese out there flying around from one place to another. You know, last week I talked a little bit about whirly birds. These aren't birds, but the whirly birds are the seeds from the elms and the maple.
That's the other one I was going to mention. Another one of those spring things I'm not too crazy about because of the way they clog the gutters.
Yes, indeed. I mentioned that a friend of ours was talking about she didn't have any in her swimming pool this year and didn't have to worry about cleaning that out. But that's not the only place there are a problem because these seeds grow. If you have hands full of maple seeds in your garden or elm seeds in your garden and you don't get rid of them right quick, you're going to have a problem with weeds a little bit later in the year. They're trees, little tree seedlings, but they're weeds anyway. So you need to pick those up, rake them up as quick as you can get in. It's going to dry up a little bit here. Rake those out. And when you see them beginning to grow, hold them out right away so they don't grow into trees for you. Because if you let them grow a year, it's amazing how tough it is to pull those crazy things out. They make roots.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Well, the tulips were beautiful. We sure enjoyed those all around the area. Now, there's something left over. What do we do with that?
Well, the blooms that are left over, the blooms that have faded, These need to be cut off. First of all, they don't look very good. Second of all, they actually take energy to make seed instead of replenishing the bulbs. So you need to take them off. But you need to take care of the leaves as long as they stay green. These are the factories that replenish the bulbs, so you need to cut them off, not cut them off until they turn yellow. Now, I know a lot of folks, because they like them to look neat, will bundle them up and put a little rubber band around the tops of them, and that works okay. Some people say you shouldn't do that because that reduces the amount of photosynthesis, but it's better to do that than to cut the things off. So go ahead and tie them up if you want to. And by the way, the spring flowering shrubs were just gorgeous, and with the cold weather, they lasted a long time this year. Now, one of the problems people have with the spring flowering shrubs is that they call me all the time and say, why don't my shrubs flower this year? Well, one of the reasons that you don't get flowers, if you prune those things after they've set the flower buds for the next year, you're not going to have flowers. Mm-hmm. When do you prune them? As soon as the flowers fade and fall off. That's the time to prune your flowering shrubs like your lilacs and your forsythia and so forth. So watch, when the flowers fall off of those things, go out and do the trimming. Then you'll have flowers the next year. And there are just lots of things that need to be done in the outdoors right now as soon as we can get out. With all of this wet weather, we've had problems with foliar diseases on crab apples and some other kinds of plants. You need to get some fungicide on those things if the weather's going to stay wet, and it looks like it probably will, to protect the new leaves as they come out. One other thing that people see that really frightens them is their pine bushes or pine trees jumping when you go by them. It's not the pine itself. It's what look like caterpillars, and they're jumping. These are pine sawflies, and the best thing to do with those is to remove them by hand. Put a rubber glove on your hand and just strip them off of that branch. You don't have to spray or anything because they only get on maybe two or three branches on a bush. So that's a real quick way to get them off, and you don't need to be squeamish about it either. So that's a couple of things that people need to be looking at.
The lawns are looking good. Of course, they typically do this time of year, especially certainly by comparison to later on of the year. And that mowing routine has begun once more.
Yes, I was going to ask if you have any spare sheep.
That was suggested by somebody here that we might want to get some kind of an animal to graze. I said, I think this animal can still mow for a while.
Yeah, I think so. There's enough grass out here for a hay crop, really. But you need to get that cut off as soon as you can. Today would be a good day to do that. It's dry. If you can't get through it with your mower set at the normal height, set it up a little bit and go through it. And then cut it again the next day. You probably need to collect the clippings if there's as much hay as it looks like in some of these places. But the other thing that you can do to make the yard look really nice, once you get it cut, is to edge the walks and the driveways and the beds with an edger. One last thing I want to mention before we run out of time. As Jane and I have been walking around the last week, we go walking early in the morning. It's amazing how many sprinklers are running in the rain. You don't need to sprinkle when it's raining. Turn them off. Don't turn them back on until we get into a dry period. Then turn them on and water the lawn, put down an inch of water, and then turn them off again. Sometimes we go through a whole season without ever needing to put water on. It's a precious resource. We don't really respect it as much here because we have this big puddle out east of us here. But in a lot of places, water is really dear, and we don't need to waste it here either.
Save electricity, save water, and don't create disease problems in your lawn.
That's exactly right.
Well, thank you, Jim. Always good to talk to you, and we sure appreciate the opportunity to have you with us for another season here on WGN Radio. That's wonderful.
It's my pleasure, Max. I always enjoy visiting with you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. Jim Fazell, consulting horticulturist, who shared a statistic with us via email the other day. The National Garden Bureau says nearly half the homes in the United States have gardens. 25%, one out of four adults garden as a hobby. So there's good reason for us to talk to him and share some of his knowledge with you here. I know you've probably seen video and you've seen a lot of stories on it, but have you in person ever watched the operation of a drone, Roger?
No, not in person.
It's very cool. And, there's so much of it now can actually be automated. In other words, a farmer can start the drone over the end of the field and have the path all planned. And analyzes the crops. It has great utility in agriculture, maybe more so than any other industry. We'll give you an update on some of the things related to the unmanned aircraft in agriculture coming up here in this half hour of the Saturday Morning Show. Always great to talk to you, Rascal. So have a great week.
You too, young man. Hang in there.
Thank you, Roger Battish in the WGN Newsroom. We hear from Orion Samuelson, too, of course, every Saturday morning here. Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products.
I know you love your glass ceramic cooktop, except when it's time to clean it. So let me tell you about one product that will leave your cooktop sparkling clean. It's Wink Glass Ceramic Cooktop Cleaner, strong enough to remove those greasy, grungy spots and yet gentle enough for smooth top ranges. It cleans, polishes, and conditions smooth top ranges. And special conditioners leave a protective coating which helps prevent scratches. That's Wink Cooktop Cleaner. Learn more at WHINK.com. I think of myself as being a very positive person in my outlook on life and what I'm doing and what the world is doing. But there are times when I wonder if I should just give up, because as I look back over the past decades, we have been talking about convincing people that ethanol is a good additive to our fuel supply. It's grown on farms in America, refined by American workers in rural communities, and yet I still hear people who are opposed to the use of ethanol and biodiesel and any other renewable fuel saying it's bad. And then, of course, the GMO issue keeps going. Despite all of the scientific studies, people still say they don't want any GMO food because it's dangerous. I'm thinking about giving up on that one until the report came out this week from a very prestigious organization that said, no, there is no difference, no danger. But despite all this, I feel like I'm talking to the wall sometime. The third issue is timely right now. One listener said, I haven't heard your safety sermon this planting season. So here it comes, and it focuses on SMV, the slow-moving vehicle emblem. SMV in many states is legal signage alerting drivers on rural roads and highways that you're approaching a slow-moving vehicle. And for that very reason, it should not be on mailbox posts, it should not be on gates. It should not be on any stationary object. If you want to mark your driveway, there are any other fluorescent signs that you can use. And we have been talking about that for years. What really disturbs me are the fact that farmers and ranchers use the slow-moving vehicle emblem on their mailbox to mark a driveway. Again, when you use an SMV emblem on a stationary object, you are taking away the true meaning of something that can save lives on country roads and something to watch for, telling you there is a slow-moving vehicle ahead. So I guess I won't give up, but please be careful. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
All right, Big O, appreciate it. Samuelson Says, heard it every Saturday morning here, brought to you by Wink Products Company. 19 minutes before 6 on the Saturday morning show. It's great to be with you this morning. We sure appreciate the opportunity. And, Kathy and Judy are going to be out among them this morning. I'm out among you. Kathy and Judy will be on remote broadcast between 10 and 12 out at Garfield Park. Not there far from the Eisenhower Expressway. And of course, before that, Lou, Wildman Lou, will be here from 7 to 10. Mike Steven is getting ready down to the studio. He's going to have a guest with him between 6 and 7 this morning. So stay along. Listen to Mike. Always a little bit outside the loop there, by all means, here on WGN Radio Chicago. Those unmanned aircraft. Chad Colby, the guy that I rely on to keep me abreast of what's going on with those, stopped in the television studio this week. He was our guest on This Week in Agribusiness, seen all across America on great local television stations and the RFD TV channel. Visiting with Chad, he had all of the drone equipment set out on the table there in front of us, some of the new stuff, and it is advancing quickly. And as we talked, I said to Chad,
much of the new capability is the ability to look at fields even better, right? I mean, it's not just enough to fly something over the field.
You know, you're right. I think, You know, everybody's been talking about unmanned systems, drones in fields for the last several years. You and I have reported it. But the real excitement is the understanding that these systems fly and work good. So now what are the benefits we can get with them? And as the FAA is getting closer and closer to having really solid commercial regulations in place, you're starting to see some manufacturers really step up their game in technology. A lot of that's coming from military, Max, but it's a big deal to agriculture here in the United States and around the world.
Since you mentioned the FAA quickly, will there be any significant limitations coming, you think, in the regulation that can hurt agriculture's ability to use these tools?
The only thing that I've seen right now, and we're really close to that, to having published regulations here in the next, I would say, 6 months or even sooner, is a lot of people would like the ability to fly beyond line of sight. So right now, today, when you operate anything unmanned, whether that is commercially or even as a hobbyist, you have to always keep the equipment within visual line of sight. Well, in the agriculture space, obviously, as you well know and our listeners do as well, is a lot of guys have thousands of acres to cover. And a lot of these places in the United States, it's a remote area where no one's flying airplanes. But right now, you're limited to what you can see. And that's basically a half to three quarters of a mile circle around you. So that's the only limitation that some people have a little heartburn about, if you would. But right now, there's just so much excitement here.
There are giant strides being made, are there not, in the cameras and the kind of information they can pull from the field with the software?
You know, you're right. One of the things that's been challenging about this is, you know, as the technology moves, we needed different types of sensors to do different things in crops. Remember, remote sensing is really nothing new, Max. We've got friends that have been doing it in airplanes 20 years ago, right? But the difference is we need smaller packages, right? We need cameras that are of a smaller size, okay? And this is a new camera here that, you know, 3 years ago, this technology would have been $30,000. This year, it's $3,500. And then taking that one step farther, this particular camera, though it's a little bigger than size, what makes this one unique is it starts to do the processing in flight. And this particular company has the ability then to process the data actually in the field within 15 or 20 minutes on the tailgate of your truck. So things have come a long, long way.
The batteries. A couple of years ago, you came by my house. Your pickup truck was loaded with batteries. You were the battery man. Are they coming down in size a little bit? Do they have longer times of charge?
Yeah, they do. Flight times are getting better, and the technology is getting better as well. I'll hand this to you and show you an example. If you notice that battery, Max, on the inside of it, actually you can see through it, and that's for cooling. So they're starting to develop batteries specifically designed for more efficiency in drone use. So it's exciting.
I see Flying Ag on there. Are there several companies that have geared up to serve the ag market exclusively?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the big companies are starting to really recognize that this is going to be a big space.
Yeah,
the big players as far as in farm machinery go, really for the most part, they've kind of stayed back a little bit, Max. Over the next couple of years, I believe they're going to step in as well. Right now, everybody's really kind of waiting for the actual commercial regulations from the FAA, which will be coming in 2016.
Maybe we better get that one.
It's really an exciting time in agriculture. It doesn't matter where I'm at and who I'm speaking with. Everyone's excited about this for one real reason. There's really no limits right now in technology and ag, and you've seen that over the years, and so much stuff is coming so fast right now. It's really exciting.
The co-ops, the companies that serve producers, many of them are poised, are they not, to really jump into this?
Yeah, absolutely. Typically, not a day or two goes by where I'm not getting phone calls from organizations like that are trying to understand where this is going to play. Remember, there's a good focus on technology coming from satellites today. That's very beneficial. I really like that. Except the problem is you get cloudy weather and inclement weather. This you can deploy right from the tailgate of your pickup truck, get the information right there, and then start to make some decisions on your farm.
You're on Facebook. You have a website. How can folks stay abreast of these developments through you?
Yeah, if you go to ColbyAgTech.com, there's a website, and on Twitter at TheChadColby. And anything I learn with this stuff, I just keep sharing with everybody around the world.
Chad Colby. You heard him say ColbyAgTech.com and TheChadColby on Facebook with a lot of good information on the unmanned aircraft. It was interesting, the chief technology officer for the National Ag Statistics Service of the USDA was talking about the drones this week. Michael Villavilla said farmers are going to be more dependent upon them, the reason being drones are a lot cheaper and can gather high-resolution sensitive data. So he said a farmer or a rancher will be able to better understand what they have in their operation. And you get the feeling by listening to him that they'll be moving more and more to drones at the
USDA to track the crops. Maybe we'll get their data quicker now. You know, we have to wait about 10 days to get a crop report after they've been out analyzing the fields. Shout out to Ed out planting seed corn in northwestern Indiana this morning. He tweeted to me. Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, please do, at Max Armstrong. And as Chad Colby said, you can follow him. He's the Chad Colby. More coming up on the Saturday Morning Show after this. Naomi Bloom, Senior Market Advisor for Stuart Peterson, located in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Welcome to our studio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about planting progress to begin with. When the weekly crop bulletins come out this next week, will we see that we're starting to get a little bit behind? I mean, we weren't much ahead of average when the bulletins came out this past week, and we've had some rain and now some drying weather. What's your assessment of that?
That's a great question. From the producers that we've been talking to, the producers in southern Illinois, southern Indiana, parts of Missouri really didn't get much done at all, and that'll absolutely be reflected on the report this week. But on the flip side of that, parts of Minnesota and the Dakotas and Wisconsin finally had their week to catch up. It won't be a huge week for progress, but it'll definitely show some improvement, and I think we'll probably stay on track to the 10-year average. And there's no sign of major, major delays in sight yet, so I don't feel that the market's going to be very reactive to the situation either way.
People are saying, warm it up a little bit. Let's get some warmer weather. And we've seen so many social media shots of sick-looking corn, yellow corn, purple corn. We are starting to warm up a little bit. Was there any significant damage done, in your assessment, in terms of the cold weather to corn crops specifically?
We heard that there was some damage done in some areas, but other places were saying that the growth stage hadn't really made it too far out yet, so that way they thought the crop would be able to come back probably in another week's time after we get the heat finally coming. We'll know for sure if more damage has been done. But at this time, the market isn't reacting to it, and the thought is that it's going to be good enough, or it's early enough yet, if anything needed to be replanted, there would still be plenty of time to get that in the ground, and that we would have some production coming down the road.
What do you think has been the effect of the combination of the market response and also the corn planting delays and shifting some acreage into soybeans? To what extent has that taken place in your mind, Naomi?
We're hearing a lot of it from clients who have talked about it. The clients who had all their anhydrous down and all their chemicals down, obviously they're not going to make a switch. But there have been a few producers who have said on some of their smaller acres they've made the switch. Some of the producers in the southern states have been saying less cotton, more beans. And so I think that shift is happening. Right now the market is assuming that 1 million acres has been lost for corn, that it got shifted into soybeans. So that perception is what's made the market rally. I don't think it's going to be more than 1 million acres by any means that have been reduced for planted acres, but we have absolutely been hearing it.
That June report is going to be very important, isn't it? And of course, there'll be all kinds of ideas formulated ahead of the release of the June acreage numbers.
Yeah, that June 30th report is always a big one. It's a major crescendo heading into the report, and then of course with the 4th of July weather and then the heat coming in for pollination of corn. The report right now, the market is already assuming it's 1 million less acres of corn and it's going to be 1 million more acres of beans, and that's been priced into the market. That's why we have $4 corn. That's why the soybean price had rallied, but now it's suddenly running out of steam. So that's all priced in. So we're not going to be talking about much more than that over the next month. These are the assumed numbers. So if the USDA doesn't change numbers in June, that would be a new factor of information because the market has already been trading this switch of acres already.
Speaking of crop production, we can't have this discussion without talking about Argentina. And the assumption that the USDA is making at this point in terms of Argentine exports, their numbers and exports are higher than the trade for the most part, are they not?
Yes, that's true. Especially actually in the wheat, I had realized this week that their first quarter wheat, there was double of what it was a year ago at this time. So that wheat market is really taking most of the exports. And then other crops with the corn and the beans, the export market there is stronger as well. And they had taken some of the U.S. market share. However, with the dollar in the past couple weeks being lower, the U.S. was able to catch up in some of that regard. But Argentina, very much a market player right now.
Well, their soybeans, I mean, we've seen some estimates that their exports will be down as much as 25%. There was a report I saw this week attributing that kind of a reduction potentially because of the flood damage. Now,
many of us are assuming they're, you know, they're going to be able to blend a lot of those beans. But then there are people talking about quality problems in terms of the Argentine exports if they try to blend poor quality beans with good stuff.
Okay, see, and I'll just be frank. I hadn't heard that this week. So that would definitely be another reason why the market had been staying higher, because of hopes then that the United States would get some of that product as far as the export market goes and the market share. Now, newer this week also is the ideas that the Feds would, you know, raise the interest rates. So that made the dollar bump up yesterday. So that could be something that maybe reduces some of that possibility for exports. And we saw in the Gulf that basis right now is only 20 or 30 cents over. Normally it's about 70 cents over. So.
Hey, thanks to Naomi Bloom from Stuart Peterson Group up at West Bend, Wisconsin, for sharing some comments about the markets. I was just looking at yesterday's closes. Soybeans, it was a mixed close. July was up 4 at 10.75 and a half a bushel. November beans down 4 and 3 quarters at 10.48 and 3 quarters. But it was a different story on corn. Corn futures climbed. July up 4 and 3 quarters to 3.94 and 3 quarters. And the December corn up 2 and a half to 3.99 and 3 quarters. Farmers still aren't able to break even on corn at that price level. University of Illinois earlier this week said they need 4.20 a bushel. It's not quite to $4 in those nearest months, but getting close. Soybeans, that's a different story. Break even is put at 10.25 a bushel, and yeah, we're well above that. On the July beans, they're up to 10.75 and a half, as I mentioned. Well, we'll see you on the radio later on in the week ahead. Friday, I guess there's something happening, so we'll be along for that. Thank you for joining us on the Saturday Morning Show. Thanks to Bob Ferguson, our engineer. Thanks to Orion Samuelson. And on behalf of Orion, this is Max Armstrong on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.